Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Our gospel reading this morning shifts from Mark to John, and I'll be reading from the first chapter of John. If you'd like to follow along, it'll be on the screen. There was a man sent from God whose name was John, and he came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. This is the testimony given by John when the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" He confessed and did not deny it, but confessed, "I am not the Messiah." And they asked him, "What then? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Then they said to him, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" He said, "I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as the prophet Isaiah said." Now, they had been sent from the Pharisees, and they asked him, "Why then are you baptizing, if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" And John answered them, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one whom you do not know, the one who is coming after me. I'm not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." This took place in Bethany across the Jordan where John was baptizing.
Lost and weary traveler, searching for the way to go. Stranger, heavy-hearted, longing for someone you know. May you find a light. May you find a light. May you find a light to guide you home. I
received an email from a friend this week asking me about church and God and community. It was a phenomenal email. It was one of those emails that I kept going back to all week. The person wrote, "I was wondering if you all at the table ever put on programs of any kind for, I'm not sure what words to use, for non-believers or skeptical seekers, for people like that. I saw your blueprint series, and the idea of thinking about spiritual matters with a small group is really attractive to me. I just don't know that it would be appropriate for someone who does not identify as a Christian. I've been enthusiastically non-religious since leaving the Catholicism I was born into many years ago." I love that line. "I've been enthusiastically non-religious since leaving the Catholicism I was born into many years ago, and in a way, this, my interest, is totally confusing to me. I don't at this point feel comfortable coming to worship, even though I very much get the feeling that I'd be welcomed, doubt and all. But I wonder if there's some way to, I don't know, learn more." My friend is longing for a community to explore the deep questions that she holds. And she's a little fearful, I think for a lot of reasons, maybe what church has been, or maybe an image of what church might be. I know that I've been there where my friend is. And my hope for us as a church is that we can be a place where people like this friend can bring their whole lives, all of their longings and their fears, their doubts and their hopes, their uncertainties. I want to be the kind of people who welcome folks who don't have it all figured out, yet feel a longing for something that is really hard to put to words. I want to be the kind of church that can help folks like this experience good news by living with them in those questions. And I want to be clear that that is really hard work. Really hard work. Too often churches have failed to go deep with people who long to go there because I believe we've been afraid. So we've turned to pat answers. And in doing so, we've shut down deeper questions. I think this is because a lot of us are afraid to live in the complexities and the mysteries of faith ourselves. So we avoid going there at whatever cost. David Lohse, who's now a Lutheran president of a seminary, he shared a story on a blog that relates to this that I want to bring to us. He was teaching other pastors in Canada. And as he was doing this, it was a group of young clergy. And the folks that he had gathered around, he was talking with them about ministry in this post-Christian world that we live in. And one young pastor shared with him a story about his mother. This young pastor's mother had asked him, "Help me understand why you're the only one of all your siblings that goes to church. Like, why do none of my other children go to church?" And so he turned the question back to his mom and said, "Well, why would you tell your children you go to church, Mom?" And he said, what happened was the most uncomfortable 20 minutes of conversation he'd ever experienced with his mom. She stumbled around why she went to church. And she kept going and finally came like one sentence that seemed like it was actually a sentence. And he said, "Go with that, Mom. Go with that. Have that conversation." See, she is like so many people in our churches who haven't been challenged or invited to talk about their faith since they went through confirmation. And so articulating why we go to church, much less our own sense of faith, becomes really challenging for us. It's scary. It's remarkably difficult. I think this is why I so deeply love and value our kitchen tables, places where we gather together every week to practice telling our own experience about where God is moving in the world. We practice that because it takes practice. This is fantasy football playoffs right now. I hope my team has been practicing. I do not want Jamal Charles going out there with "he's not ready." I want us to be people of faith who practice what we're doing. My sense is we'll be a lot better at it. We might not lose to the Raiders again if that happens. But you never know. You never know. Nor do we ever really know when we practice our faith where it's going to lead us or how it's going to lead us to actually have words to share about it. There is a young person who we're really thrilled to have coming on to our leadership team here at our church. She is going to be working with others on a couple of our teams to help us discern where God's lure is calling us as a church in the years ahead. And so I was talking with her a week or two ago. And one of the things that we were talking about was this desire that we have to have spiritual formation more central to all of the teams. We don't have very many, we only have two, but both of the teams that we have. We've eliminated all the rest because we think committee work is not really that helpful most of the time. But we have these two that we think are central, like finance and trustees. How do we watch over our finances responsibly? How do we watch over our facility responsibly? We're talking about this. How do we help us grow to have at the center of even those conversations conversation about God and faith? And this young person looked at me and said, "You know, I'm really ready to go there. I'm ready to have the conversation around finance and trustees. What I'm afraid about is leading the part about the faith part. This is one of our leaders. If I was going to like pick a person to like tell their faith story, she'd be toward the top of my list. And yet she's afraid. She's afraid to tell some of her own story in those ways or to put herself in a place that is vulnerable. Because the truth is, when we start to talk about our faith, it is a vulnerable place that we go. And many of us have been beaten up there. So it's really hard to go back. So somehow, though, you had the courage to walk in here this morning. You had the courage to walk in and to say that we're moving toward love being born at Christmas. And I want to be around folks who want to try to live into that mystery and that beauty together with me. I don't have all the answers. I actually know that nobody else around me has all the answers either. But I'm not willing to go it alone. I'm going to take this risk and I'm going to walk through those doors to actually try to talk about what matters most. That's exactly what happened to John the Baptist. This group of people came to him and they want to know what matters most. Who are you? In the English, we say it, who are you? But in the Greek, the you comes first. The real question is, who are you? And John the Baptist, to be clear, is out in the middle of nowhere. And he is baptizing folks. And that just sounds a little, I don't know, maybe strange to some of us. But I want to help us get how dangerous that is. Because baptism served a lot of different functions back then. One of those was to purify. We don't actually know exactly why John the Baptist was putting water on folks. We just know that he was. And guess who would get upset about that? The people who control the temples where baptism is supposed to be happening. They don't like the notion that there's this crazy dude out there by a river a long ways away doing something that they're supposed to do. So they don't go themselves because that would probably have been beneath them. But they find some folks around them, the Levites. It's like, it's not even the police. It's more like, it's a security guard. They send the security guards out to the river to say, what is up? Before they even ask him, he says, I'm not the Messiah. The only reason you have to say, I'm not the Messiah, is if the people who are coming to you want to know if you think you're the Messiah. And they clearly thought he was the Messiah. And so he shuts that down right away. I am not the Messiah. So are you Elijah? No. Are you the prophet? No. Then who are you? I'm the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. You're the what? That's what you are? The voice of one crying out in the wilderness. This is really good news, folks. This is really good news because John the Baptist doesn't even get a last name. He's just the Baptist, right? The baptizer. He is so important in Scripture that we don't even need more than that. Just the Baptist. You immediately go to John. Do you hear how bad he is at articulating what he's doing? I am the voice of one crying out in the wilderness. That's what you've got? That's it? That's all. This is good news because when you get worried about whether you're going to have the right response when someone asks you a question about God, can you know at the depths of who you are that John the Baptist was like, I'm not the Messiah. I'm not. I'm the voice. Like, that's all he had. This is good news, people. We can do this together. I promise we really can. The bar is low. It's very, very low. So some of you, though, are thinking, well, the bar is low, but that's why you're the pastor. Like, if people have a question about this at my work or maybe my neighbor or maybe somebody around me, like, I can just send them to you. John the Baptist was not a pastor, not a priest. We can't get off the hook that easy. And maybe we think, well, this witnessing thing, like it happens at the beginning of John's gospel, but it can't be that important. They're probably like moving to something more significant. In John's gospel, witnessing, telling what we know about good news or pointing to the light comes up 31 times. So I heard a lot of folks as we were doing the series on John that were like, this is my favorite gospel. I know that one of them was not Linda, but others are like, this is my favorite gospel. Okay, if this is your favorite, guess how many times witnessing comes up in Matthew? One time. And then in Luke, one time. Mark, it comes up none, as my daughter would say. None. Not even none and a half. That's what she would say. None times. Guess what? 31 is a lot more than those. So John's gospel cares a lot about witnessing, about telling what we know. And it doesn't look like what some of us expect witnessing to look like. We put it in this box of like fire and brimstone or accusation or shaming. Maybe we've known that, or maybe we've just known it around us, but it's in us, so we're afraid of it. Then they said to John, "Who are you? Let us have an answer for those who sent us." See, they're not even the like important ones there asking, but they want to go back and tell on him. He said, "I'm the voice of one crying out in the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord, as the prophet Isaiah said." A voice. That's what John is. His actions are important, but he's defined by his voice, crying out in the wilderness. And so I wonder if you've been there in that wilderness. If you've been in a wilderness and you've heard someone crying out that was trying to show you the way. For me, one of the moments where I was in that wilderness is while I was in seminary in New York City. And people go to seminary to try to find the voice, right? They try to learn that. So you'd think that it would happen in a class. But for me, it didn't happen in a class. Well, sometimes it happened in a class, actually. The place that it came up strongest for me, that voice in the wilderness, it came up for me in the South Bronx. It was my first day to go to work at a place called Youth Ministries for Peace and Justice. It's a group that work on environmental justice and police reform. It's about a block and a half from where Amadou Diallo was shot 41 times by four white police officers. And my first day there, I'm standing in the front entry to this house that we had, that we would have like 80, 100 young kids, like four-year-olds all the way up to high school kids that did organizing to try to help that community feel alive, to find hope. They were trying to point and prepare the way for light. My first day there, and I was nervous on so many different levels, but two young teenagers are standing in front of me. One is Dominican and one is Puerto Rican. And what they're talking about is tonight, it's a Friday, we're going to go down tonight to Chinatown and we're going to take some candles and we're going to light them and we're going to be outside of this huge apartment complex. And the reason that they're going to go and do this is because the folks, the tenants who've lived there for so long are being evicted by the landlord because the prices around them have gone up and they want to be able to rent to people who aren't them. Okay? So these teenage kids are talking about this. And then one looks at me and he's like, "Do you want to go?" And I didn't have any really words to say. So I just kind of stared back, trying to figure out what's going on. See, Chinatown on the subway is at least an hour and 15 minutes. And it looks like it's going to rain. And in New York, when it rains, like, you're just kind of stuck. It's not like Sacramento where everybody drives all over the place. So they respond one more time. "This is where we're going to go. We're going to light these candles. Do you want to go?" And I don't think they meant to change the course of my life, and I'm confident they don't know that they did. But in that wilderness, that was a voice that called to me and made me rethink, what am I doing? What really matters most? Who am I? And I didn't come up with the answer right that moment. I didn't even say yes. I didn't go down with those kids. They were doing it because what they knew is that in their own neighborhood, if someone came and they were going to be evicted, they wanted other people to come and light candles there for them too. They know that we're in this together. And that set me on this long series of events that led me to this place, to try to practice my faith with you all, to try to figure out how to be a pastor. Isn't it strange how voices in the wilderness cry out to us? How things that prepare the way for us actually happen. See, I want them to be linear. I want to be able to say, this person said this, And then these are the four steps that I took, and I got here. And then I took two more steps because one more person said this. But it doesn't work that way. There's no obvious cause and effect. John the Baptist could have pointed the people around him. He could have, Jesus was there. He could have pointed, that's the one, that's the Messiah. And if he's so good at witnessing to the light, why didn't he do that? I don't know, but he didn't. He said, I'm a voice of one crying out in the wilderness. Maybe because that's what it actually looks and feels like to point people to a light. Maybe that's what it looks like to prepare a way. I was at the gym earlier this week, and we're doing our warm-ups. And I have a guy who comes up to me and says, so are you doing anything at the church for the holidays? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, we are. And I like kept rowing. And then I said, you know, we're doing this thing. It's called, we call it Candlelight Christmas Eve. So we gather at nighttime when the sun goes down. And I'm breathing harder as I'm rowing. And we sing about the Christmas story. And then we tell the Christmas story. And then at the end, it like comes really quiet, and we sing Silent Night, and we light candles, and then we go out into the world, and like we go out into the world changed. So we come back, and we're going to do crazy things like host 100 homeless folks here at the church, because that's what it looks like. So I tried to talk about that, and I'm better now talking about it than I was on the rower. But do you know why he asked? He asked because someone else at the gym who's come here a couple times said, that place is pretty cool. And so he wanted to know a little bit more about it. I'm pretty confident that neither of them thought that they were witnessing. Neither of them were probably thinking as they were talking about this, I am testifying to the light. I am preparing the way. I am a voice of one crying out in the wilderness. But you know what? I think that's what it actually looks like in our daily lives. Folks who are longing for a place where they can like live in their real questions and hopes and concerns can find a place because others say, go check this out. A couple weeks ago, we had a concert here. I don't even know that we need the Brilliance to come back because you guys are so awesome. But we had the Brilliance that were here. And in the back somewhere, I don't even know where it was, in the back, Pastor Linda was talking to two people, and one of them has been to church here a few times, and one was coming for the first time, and the one that was coming for the first time is from another Methodist church. And she says, how do you get all these people to come here? And Pastor Linda says, well, people just kind of talk about what's meaningful for them with the people they know. And then people come and check it out. Kind of like you, that's how you found your way here, right? And the person's like, yeah, it's true. And the other person who brought her says, but she's not going to stay. It's like, oh, all right. Maybe so, but maybe that invitation will be life transforming. Like maybe that person will be in another congregation like 10 years from now talking about this moment when she was sitting at this concert and there was a voice that cried out in the wilderness and this is what it sounded like. Her life could literally change just like mine did. I don't know. I think this is partly why as we move toward two services on February 1st that we long to prepare the way for folks to live in their own longings and fears and to not be afraid. The truth for me is that I find myself more afraid when I try to go it alone than when I have the courage to sit with others and to try to talk it out. Because some of us are going to have a hard time with this. A lot of us have witnessing in such horribly wrong-headed ways that we're not going to really hear a word that I'm saying. We're not. See, others have claimed to know Jesus with such absolute, utter certainty in ways that were hurtful to who we've been that we can't even go there because those one-size-fits-all answers have just crushed it out of us. Some of us have run away. I know that I was. And yet, somehow, we all found our way back here this morning with all of those mixed-up feelings and emotions and uncertainties. And here we are. Trying to talk about how we're experiencing God's movement in our life and in the world. This is how they write about it in John's gospel. Now, they had been sent from the Pharisees. They asked John, "Why then are you baptizing if you are neither the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" And John answered, "I baptize with water. Among you stands one who you do not know." See, he didn't point to who that one was. "The one who is coming after me, I am not worthy to untie the thong of his sandal." Do you hear how humble John is in that? This isn't about me. It's about one who's coming after me. If John has clarity at all in this moment, it's that he is not the Messiah, not the Christ. And I find that good news because it means neither are you and neither am I. We don't have to be. We don't have to have every answer, or we don't have to save anyone. But we are called to be a voice that points to the birth of hope and love that came long ago at Christmas and comes each and every moment into our lives. Our invitation is to actually see it and then to find the courage to say, we think that's it. We think that might be love. Do you see that too? That's what we're doing as we learn to listen. That's what happens in the Christmas story. God comes into the world. The way our children are learning about it in Godly Play is the Word is born a wordless child. That's more good news to me. The Word is born a wordless child. We follow a God who comes into the world wordless, listening to what's going on around, so that God can learn the stories of the people around and then respond to those with love to give voice to hope, to cry out in wilderness. And if this makes you anxious still, that we're going to still have to have a voice, I want to tell you about a pastor who's been a mentor for me. Actually, it's a writer and a teacher and a theologian. His name is Parker Palmer. We've used his work in here a lot. A couple years ago, I was invited to Minnesota with this group of young emerging pastors. And we got to go spend a whole week with Parker Palmer. It's like, think of your own field. If you're, if you're a teacher or a developer or you're a social worker, like, who is that person that you want to go spend a week with? Like, come up with your top five. He's on my top five. Okay. So I got to go with these other young pastors to sit with Parker Palmer and to learn from him. He's a Quaker educator. He says, he shared this on his Facebook, I think yesterday or the day before. He was listed. There's a group that's called Spirituality and Practice. And so they named the 30 most significant theological voices, spiritual leaders that are alive in our day. So that's a pretty awesome list to be included on. So Parker Palmer was included on that list. It's a phenomenal list of witnesses. Like, it's an amazing one, right? And so in response, Parker Palmer writes, "I wasn't surprised to find myself on a list of the living, though there are days when I wonder about that. But to find myself on a list of spiritual teachers, my self-definition is simple. I was born baffled." That's what he said. "I was born baffled. As a result, I've spent many years reflecting, writing, and speaking to probe into my bafflement. But every time I break through a bit of clarity, I discover another layer of bafflement. As far as I can tell, it's bafflement all the way down." I mean, what kind of teacher is that? Well, it's the kind of teacher, it is. It's the kind of teacher that helped me to testify to the light. It's the kind of teacher that helped me to see light in my own life on so many occasions. Layers of bafflement have been for me a voice of one crying out in the wilderness. Maybe that's what it looks like to testify to the light for your entire life, is to see and to experience that kind of humility. Maybe it's actually the kind of humility that was the very beginning of my friend's question in her email. It's a longing to go deeper. It's a vulnerable place to go into those depths. It's not a coincidence that John says, I'm a voice of one crying out in the wilderness. Crying out in the wilderness. It's what it sounds like. It's like quivering, crying in the wilderness. It's a vulnerable place for us to be. And maybe you've been listening, and maybe you're almost ready to speak. Or maybe you're still at a place of listening, but you want to open up to how you might find a voice in these coming days as we move toward the mystery of hope being born at Christmas. Maybe you'll be like that person at the gym, and you'll wonder with others. If you're looking for a community, come check this out. Maybe that's as simple as what it looks like to help someone to find hope and love in their life and to name that. Maybe that's what preparing the way for Christmas actually looks like for you or for me or for all of us. Amen.
Thank you.